What is that?
Someone made a tape of something dying or something.
Turn that crap off! What's going on?
I want this music out of my head.
You're tuned into The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM, which gets the same response from Ricky Bobby as jazz music.
Hey, turn that off! Turn that off right now!
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Come, come on, follow me. Let yourself free. Let yourself free. Let yourself free.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody along tonight. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
It's beginning to look a lot like winter out there.
Oh yeah, it is.
I'm not really happy about that, but hey, I guess it's going to eventually come, so we'll have to deal with that when it gets here. Song you're hearing... That's Fits in the Tantrums. It's their brand new tune called Let Yourself Free from their new album, which actually goes by the same name, which is kind of cool. It's available today on most music platforms, released today. They're going to be on tour in January. January 21st, 2023, they start. No Canadian dates planned yet, though. January 31st is the closest they get right now. They'll visit Omaha. No Minneapolis stop, which is I was kind of surprised by. So
you usually that's one of kind of the expected
stop.
Like if a band is going on a tour, they'll go as far north as Minneapolis and then.
Well, then usually kick over to Chicago and do all that
exactly.
Stuff, right? No, they're going Omaha to Chicago. Yeah. So it looks like so. Big night down at I'm sure that you're aware down at the rink tonight. As you may have heard, there's going to be a little bit of festivity going on tonight due to this.
Here's Neumann in his own zone. Both clubs at full strength. Here's a pass to Solani moving in and goal. He scored! Timo Solani!
Both men mentioned there, Teppo Neumann and Timo Solani, going into the Jets Hall of Fame as they're inducted tonight. Prior to the game, I guess they're going to play tonight or whatever. But congratulations to both Timo and Teppo, as that's a pretty big honor for them. Any memories of either of those two for you, Jay, that stand out?
Honestly, so, full disclosure, I was 2 years old when the Jets left.
right, but obviously...
Yeah, I've seen Timo Solani. I think, really, the memory that sticks out for me, aside from that really funny, the years where we kept thinking he was going to retire and he just kept coming back.
Right, kept coming, yeah.
And the really funny advertisement where he throws the golf bag in lake.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the memory is when he finally got his Stanley Cup. That's an image that is burned into my memory. Just like all of those, because he's one of those guys that no matter what team you cheered for, you were a Timo Solani fan. When he had a chance to do something and win something, he's a guy that you cheered for no matter who you were. And to see him finally get that Stanley Cup was just, and the emotion of that, the tears.
Well,
that is a memory that is just seared into my memory.
Well, it's weird that you say it. Not weird, I guess. It's kind of cool that you said that, because I went and saw Brian Trottier a couple weeks ago when he was doing his book signing, and somebody asked him, what's the best memory you have sort of playing the game, right? And he said the same thing. He's like, the first one is always the one that you remember the most, because you've never had that joy, that experience, the ability to wrap your arms around the cup, that kind of stuff, right?
And you're never guaranteed that you're ever going to get that chance again.
And that's what he said. Then the next best memory is the second one, because you're like, yes, I finally got back here. I finally did it again. And he said it just gets better and better in terms of getting older. But he's like, the biggest memory you have is always the first one, right? Mm-hmm. I just struggle. And again, I'm not saying that Solani shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame for the Winnipeg Jets. I know he did a lot of good stuff here. He set 14 team records in his first year, in his rookie season.
Yeah. He's basically the city's favorite adopted son.
I mean, aside from Howard Chuck and Solani are the two hockey names that stand out, for sure. But should a guy who only played four seasons here be in your Hall of Fame? For a guy who was unceremoniously traded...
I think it, from that perspective, I think it's more that city and the fans.
But you're buying fan appreciation.
Yeah. For a mistake that
shouldn't have happened, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think...
We'll talk Hall of Fame stuff in a bit,
yeah,
but...
I think you get in there for... Obviously, we're going to talk... We've talked at length about how a singular moment can wind you up in the conversation forever, but I think the record-setting goal, the 76, throwing up the... You know, the celebration of throwing the glove up in the air and shooting it out of the sky, like, that's a memory that is part of, like, it's actually my elementary school has a painted mural that has a whole bunch of Winnipeg moments in it, and that's one of the moments that's in it. It's just like it's that much of like
again,
a part of history.
I am not underselling the importance of what he did. That 76 goals that year was huge. I mean, he tied McGillney for the league lead in terms of 76 goals. They're the last two players to hit the 70 goal mark in the NHL. He broke Peter Stastny's record for points by a rookie as well. So, I mean, he has 132 points or whatever that season as well, as the highest total in his career. But I legitimately look at that. They fell in six games to Vancouver that year.
Yep.
Like, again, Sileni had a couple of good games in that series, but not even close to being anywhere, impressive in terms of what could have happened. But I just struggle with our team, with the current Jets, always reaching back into past history to try and honor, when that should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah.
You should have done that when Timo retired. Not 20 years after he's retired. I mean, it's not been 20 years, but not, a decade after he's retired. Not...
Yeah. It's the kind of things where you're making up for... Not making up for lost time in the fact that there is a chunk of history from 96 to 2011 where you have that missing history where, like, if the team was around, you would have honored these players when they retired. You would have honored these moments and these guys throughout that history. But yeah, to that effect, like, this should have been done like a long, long time ago, and what's taken so long?
So two key things for me, and that you can laugh at or agree with this, but, and Tepos isn't even part of the Jets' history. This is just something that he did, and I was pretty surprised by it. But Timu, his 54th goal, you know who got the primary assist on that? Take a shot. Anybody. Just throw out a name. A random Jets point
1.0.
Because it's going to be wrong. I'll tell you that right now.
I can't even.
The guy who flipped...
Bob Asenza, let's go.
No, the guy who flipped the puck from the defensive zone, flipped the puck into the air that Timu skated up and caught up to, was none other than Ty Domi.
Oh! Why wasn't that the first name that jumped into my head?
Ty Domi was the player on the ice that flipped the puck down the ice. The other thing, Teppo Newman, and people might not know this, he was suspended for a year by the Buffalo Sabres. Because he chose to not report to camp and instead had life-saving heart surgery done, and the Sabres suspended him without pay because he refused to report to camp.
Wow, so the Sabres just have a really long history
of being
not letting guys take care of their bodies the way that they want them to.
So, yeah, so Teppo, I mean, made a little sort of history there by basically saying, I'll get myself fixed.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Beyond that,
the fact that it's life saving too.
But that's the thing
for me. It's like he would have died.
I mean, again, I don't know how bad it was. I don't know, but I mean, obviously, he's still alive, and we're happy for that. So, congratulations to Timo and Teppo. They're going to the Hall of Fame tonight. Hockey Canada met with the government this week on Tuesday. We're going to get back into the Hockey Canada stuff. Get this off our plates early here because there was a lot that went on. For the first time since these meetings started, we actually got answers.
Yep.
And we got one person to say one thing that nobody else has said, and I'll bring that up in a second. So, meeting with the Heritage Committee this time was Pat McLaughlin, who's the Senior Vice President of Strategy, Operations, and Branding for Hockey Canada, and Bob Nicholson, the former CEO from 98 to 2014 of Hockey Canada. McLaughlin's opening statement made it clear up front that he was hired after the 2018 incident occurred, knows nothing about the finances, and was only made aware of the incident in 2018 back in May of 2022. So, McLaughlin basically saying, I was not involved at all, which is fine. I mean, that's okay. Nicholson came out and said, quote, he was proud of the progress we made, but didn't go far enough in ensuring that safety for everyone was delivered. Nicholson was not involved. He made that very clear as well, was not involved with Hockey Canada in 2018 as well. So basically,
because he was gone by that time, right?
2014 was when he left, yeah. basically, he declined to answer any 2018 questions because he said he didn't think it would be fair to Hockey Canada or to the players and the victims involved.
Yep.
Which is fair. I'm not going to hold that against either McLaughlin or Nicholson because there were other things that the committee wanted to focus on. So here we go. So Kevin Waugh, who's the conservative member for Saskatoon, he jumped in first. He asked Nicholson when he knew of the 2003 incident. Nicholson responded that he was told by media on July 7th at the NHL entry draft in Montreal. So he had no prior knowledge of this. Okay. Nicholson was not involved with the finances of the three funds in question. He made that clear to Waugh as well after being asked. He was asked if he could address the funds with respects to parents paying fees unknowingly into these sexual assault claims. Nicholson said the $3 fee didn't change while he was in charge, so he's not sure where the rest of the money is coming from. Okay, that's fair as well. I mean, mm-hmm. he hasn't been around Hockey Canada now for almost a decade. He didn't know the number of NDAs that were signed either, though, which I think is a little bit surprising.
Yeah. You would think that in situations like that, like,
Just before you go on, the reason that came up is because Waugh followed it up by asking about Graham James coaching in Spain. How did that happen?
Yeah.
And Nicholson, to his credit, answered, I thought, as best as he could by saying, quote, or by saying, not quoting, I'm not quoting him here, but saying that he was personally involved in letting the IIHF know and the Spanish Federation know. Beyond that, it was out of his hands. He couldn't do anything else about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I thought, okay.
If the Spanish Federation goes on and they just still go ahead with it, that's on them.
But I think that Nicholson, for the first time, answered, not for the first time in this meeting. I mean, he answered every question sort of up front. But we're actually getting real answers from people that were involved, which was different from the Skinner interview, which was different from the previous interviews with everybody at Hockey Canada. And again, we'll get into why that was. And I'm going to say this right now. Pat McLaughlin makes a great statement about the whole Navigator situation. So
I was going to say it probably has something to do with that. And also the fact that Nicholson is no longer at Hockey Canada. So I feel like he can speak a lot more openly because he has nothing to lose, really.
Right.
But I'm on the point of not knowing how many NDAs are signed. I'm of two minds about it. One, it's been a long time and people don't just like keep records of stuff like that when they leave an organization.
Well,
like unless he had something sitting in his desk.
No, but there's, as we go on, you'll find out why that is.
Yeah. But then the other thing is like they've been wanting to talk to you for weeks, if not months. Come prepared with some information.
Well, he had a lot. And again, this is where we're going with this. He had a lot. There are things, though, that he legitimately, I don't want to say regrets, but he will make comments on in a few minutes. So we'll talk about that in a second.
I just love how honest some of these statements were.
Michelle Cotto, who's the Liberal for Don Mills, he asked Bob Nicholson if he takes responsibility for the NEF, for the Equity Fund, the National Equity Fund, and the Legacy Fund. Nicholson said that he takes responsibility for the business operation necessity for them, and for protecting Graham James's victims with the NDAs that were signed at the time in order to protect the victim's innocence. So, yes, he's responsible, but he also, in terms of how they were built, mm-hmm. he believed that they were being built for this very reason, that they're uninsurable, cases that can't be insured for any reason. We built these funds to protect the victims and to make sure that, again, for business operation purposes, mm-hmm. they were in place just in case something like this came up.
Yeah.
So I will give Nicholson credit. He answered it correctly, despite it not sounding very good in the way he framed it.
Yeah. And that's fair. Like, it was mentioned, like, funds like this do exist, and they exist for a good reason, because you want to be able to have money set aside so you can provide, you know, compensation for things that are not insured, things that are not going to be covered by your insurance policy. It's the all of the stuff around it, especially that has come to light about, like, the governance and
so
the lack of transparency, which is the issue.
So this is where things kind of go off the rails now for Nicholson, because Sebastian Lemaire from the Bloc Québécois, he jumps in as the next questioner. And he said that he basically didn't even give him a chance to respond, just said that Nicholson's the architect of the problems with Hockey Canada right now, basically. If you created these funds, you're the architect.
Yep.
So,
because he didn't have solid governance practices in place.
Right. So he goes on, he doesn't even bother jumping into governance or transparency. He just asks straight up, asked Nicholson what his legacy at Hockey Canada is.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Right. And Nicholson states that the grassroots programs and the merger of the amateur hockey organization so they could grow is probably his greatest legacy. Just basically, we put money in place to grow the game as best we could in Canada. Nicholson continued to state that good was done with respect to Graham James. Obviously, they got him arrested. He was convicted. But he can't comment on 2018 as he wasn't there. Again, fair comment. I have no problem with that. He basically is saying, I did what I could at the time in terms of what was asked of me, which was grow the game, make it strong, get everything going. And we made sure that the major predator that was out there was convicted of dealing with the
situation at hand.
Right.
But the issue comes when that's being dealt with and these funds are continuing to accrue and grow and we don't know where the money is going and somebody takes what was built for a good reason and then just...
So Peter Julian, who has been screaming for audits, he's the NDP for NDP representative from New Westminster and Burnaby, BC. He asked Pat McLaughlin, so McLaughlin's first question, who hired PR firm Navigator and how much was spent on it?
Good question.
Straight up, McLaughlin didn't hide. He said the board directed McLaughlin to contact Navigator regarding public relations. The total cost is $1.6 million for Navigator's arrangement that they have with Hockey Canada, with no public funds being used to pay for any of the services that are being provided. So this is coming out of their funds, out of their coffers, out of wherever, not out of one of these funds that were created from the registration funds.
Yeah.
McLaughlin asserts that Navigator was not responsible for the media treatment, that it was decided by the board to go on the offensive. Julian asks, who do people contact now if there's any issues in terms of regarding safety in hockey? And McLaughlin answered pretty honestly with this as well, said that if it's a national team problem, it goes through OSIC. If it's a non-national team problem, it goes through a third party with provincial organizations having buttons on their websites for reporting. That's standard, he said.
Yeah.
Severance for Scott Smith was asked about as well in terms of the outgoing CEO. Mm-hmm. McLaughlin said that he cannot answer that because he actually reported to them, so he has no idea what he was being paid or what the severance was.
Yeah.
But he would let the board know that the council or the committee wants an answer for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a guy taking responsibility for actually getting information to this committee.
Yeah.
I have no problem with McLaughlin's answer there. If you don't know, state that and then say, I'll find somebody who does know. Perfect.
Amazing it's coming from the strategy and branding guy who would understand what public perception means and matters.
Rachel Thomas, the provincial conservative, or the conservative for Lethbridge, who has been fairly contentious, so she was one of the people that was all over Skinner. She asked McLaughlin if the board is currently choosing the next CEO. The current board that's in place, are they choosing the next CEO? McLaughlin said he said no, the new board will choose. So whenever they form the new board and after the elections, the new board will choose the new CEO. Okay, that's fair. That sounds like good governance right there.
Yeah.
You don't have people bringing in their buddies, their friends, whatever, to take over Hockey Canada before a new board that's going to be looking over the entire organization can go, let's start fresh with a new guy.
I still have some hesitancy about
that. I do, but...
Because it depends who they elect and where that person that's being appointed as CEO
can't judge what's going to happen in the future. We can only judge what's happening now, and that, I think, is the best answer. Thomas pointed out the Cromwell Report is the third governance review in 8 years of Hockey Canada.
Where were the other ones?
They were all swept under the rug, apparently. So she asked the very obvious question, why should the public trust Hockey Canada at all if this is the third time that their governance has come under review? McLaughlin states that he... didn't speak for anybody else. He is taking taking Cromwell's report very seriously. That for him, again, he's brand new. He wasn't there in 2018. But for him, he is taking this as serious as it can be. That he believes in good governance and this is going to be the way that they're gonna chart their course, so to speak.
Right answer.
Asked why the funds that were used weren't fully disclosed as per the Cromwell report, who stated basically in plain lettering that, hey, you guys got a bunch of money that you were spending that nobody knows about.
Yep.
Nicholson jumped in and said he stated that he thought that he did, that basically that the disclosure for what the funds were set up for was there. Again, at the time, I agree with what Nicholson is saying. Thomas pushed back and said, yeah, but it's not that. We've seen that. It's not happening now. And Nicholson agreed that it should have been more transparent. for the first time, somebody has said, we screwed up.
Yeah. Isn't it like, it's such a simple answer, but after all we've had to deal with Andrea Skinner and Scott Smith, where this, like, this feels, it's so basic, but it feels like a sigh of relief to have somebody just telling the truth.
So Anthony Housefather jumped in next. He's the Liberal parliamentary secretary. He asked Bob Nicholson if employees who resigned were required to sign NDAs, and he referenced the women's national team in 2014 after Dan Church and his coaching, after the coaching staff and the players basically forced Dan Church out. Now, if you remember, Dan Church left, and there was a bunch of stuff. Kevin Dineen came in and coached that 2014 team. There was a bunch of stuff where they had to make a quick change. Nicholson says that the change in coaching staff made it necessary with no, there was no harassment allegations to his knowledge. So this change was basically a, we need to fix the women's team, as opposed to there are a bunch of complaints against Dan Church.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. Again, Housefather followed up again with, why were there no written guidelines regarding sexual assault in Hockey Canada at that time? Mm-hmm. Nicholson says that he wishes he could go back and change that. He actually apologized for not doing that. He said, I'm sorry. The first time we've heard those two words strung together without being, I'm sorry you guys suck, or I'm sorry that we're doing this.
I'm sorry
this.
You felt
right.
That way.
Yeah. He actually accepted responsibility for not having a sexual assault. And he said, like, my job was about governance, was about all this stuff, about making sure, you know, things were in play. We were doing lots of business deals. We were trying to get stuff going with the amateur stuff. I get it. He's a busy guy.
Yeah.
But he said that's the one thing he wishes he could go back and change, is putting in an actual sexual assault guideline for how to respond to that.
Yeah.
Nicholson said that he was directed by the board of directors to sign settlement agreements, but could not say definitively if those discussions were minuted. So he was told by the board to sign off on agreements, settlement agreements,
yeah,
but could not definitively say that anybody recorded that ever happening.
Which is...
Housefather found that to be absolutely damning, because he said, what if this ever came back on you? And Nicholson said, well, I guess I'd have to live with that.
Yeah.
So Housefather is pointing out that the governance rules that were in place just simply weren't good enough underneath Nicholson. And I'm not against that. I think that's the right idea. But
all of this stuff was allowed to happen.
Right.
And it's
now snowballed going
exactly.
forward.
Exactly. Yeah. Since he has left, it has been allowed to continue and get worse.
So Sebastian Lemaire jumped in again. He asked why bylaws and documents for governance were not submitted to Government of Canada in order to maintain their tax-free status. Very honest question.
Yeah, that seems kind of like a legal matter.
Again, charities have to provide all the guidelines and bylaws in order to get their tax-free status. Nicholson says that he believed they were. He had no idea they were not. So whoever was looking after it, legal or whoever, was, again, either didn't do it or simply didn't submit. He said there were lots of discussions around tax-free status, and he just believed that somebody was going to take care of that. Again, that's the assumption is bad. But it's not really his thing. Nicholson also said that he was not part of the team that oversaw provincial sexual assault claims in any way, so that he was not involved with any of the stuff that went on there either, in terms of any bylaws or governance over that stuff.
I will give, so for that previous comment about, you know, the tax-free status, that is something that should be up to the finance, the CFO,
correct,
the finance department, and legal to handle that, to ensure, like, that's just basic governance
and again,
of the way that a nonprofit operates, that as part of your end-of-year finances, you need to file all of these things to ensure you keep your tax-free status.
And as a CEO, you're expecting your CFO to look after that.
Exactly.
I get that. I agree with that. Julian jumped in again. Peter Julian jumped in again. He confirmed that 2013-2014 women's players were not asked to sign NDAs. Nicholson believes that's the case. He said he has not heard of anybody signing an NDA. The 2003 incident was referenced once again. Nicholson stated that the Halifax police has not contacted him. So he hasn't been contacted by Halifax yet, but he said he's open to talking to them.
Yep.
He was asked by Julian about championship rings and dinners. $3,000 championship rings and $5,000 dinners. Nicholson said, and this is, again, this is, I'm paraphrasing, but this is what he said. Everyone involved with the team would have gotten a ring. So if there were board members that were on the team, that were a part of the executive team that traveled, that were listed as part of the executive team, they would have gotten a ring.
Yep.
Now, if somebody misconstrued that, he can't do anything about that. That's just human nature. He said that at the board might have gotten a ring maybe once or twice the entire time he was CEO. They may have gone back and done for some special event. So he said, like, you know, if there was a big victory for some year, we might have gotten the board a ring as well. But he's like, that would have happened once or twice maximum. So he was very clear about, we did not just discretionary spending did not happen underneath me.
Yeah,
it was not my thing. Martin Shields, who's the conservative for Bow River, he asked about 10 non-sexual claims that got NDAs. So basically, due to the amounts, the players that were involved, and these are injury claims now, why did they get NDAs?
Yeah.
Nicholson said he's not sure why that would happen at all. He said, aside from maybe protecting the health of the player, the information, the medical information from the player, he didn't have any information. Shields went on and said, if there's no line item in the financials about any of these NDAs for the 10 non-sexual, how are people supposed to know about them? And Nicholson responded that he assumed the CFO and the financial committee would have gone back and forth, but that should have been clear. Again, he's accepting responsibility.
Yeah.
After the fact, I will grant him that. It's after the fact. But he is saying, in hindsight, that should have been much, much clearer.
Yes.
Which, again, good governance.
Also, why is the CFO not standing in front of...
Again, government? I'm sure there could be...
I'm sure that's coming next.
Yeah. This is leading down a path, I believe.
Yeah.
Lisa Hefner, who has had a number of contentious arguments with Skinner.
Yeah.
She's the liberal for Hamilton Mountain. She said that funds that pay off sexual assault victims enables an institutionalized sexual assault. Did Nicholson agree? Basically, she laid it on the line that if you're going to have funds that pay off sexual assaults without any repercussions, you're basically institutionalizing sexual assault in Hockey Canada.
Yeah, because there's no consequences for people that do it. You're covering all of the costs for them and all of the trouble for them.
Nicholson said he couldn't comment on 2018. He was not there. But he said that the people that he dealt with were convicted. Again, Graham James was convicted. We know that.
Yeah.
That they went through the system and they were convicted for the crime that they committed. Nicholson explained that the large costs of hockey are local and provincial costs when asked about why does it cost so much basically for the fees for hockey? He said that it's not a Hockey Canada thing. It's basically local and provincial costs, so ice time, referees, all that kind of stuff. Hockey Canada is about building and growing opportunities. And then McLaughlin stepped in and said the brand of Hockey Canada, when asked about it in terms of being affected by what's gone on, the brand of Hockey Canada has been affected by about $23 to $24 million after sponsors left. They're down $24 million this year from where they normally are.
Yep.
So again, what's happened in the public spectrum is that, that's a huge chunk of money.
Until $24 million was missing from their coffers.
Marilyn Gladue, who's the conservative for Sarnia, who legitimately went on started her whole question period off with basically accusing Hockey Canada of being gross. Which I'm okay with. Asked,
she's not wrong.
No, she's not wrong. I'm not saying she's wrong in any way. But asked Pat McLaughlin if he's done any training on consent.
Valid question.
McLaughlin,
that should be part of governance and onboarding.
McLaughlin, I will say, maybe gave the best answer I've ever heard anybody ever. Not the best answer anybody said, but for a guy who's legitimately knee deep in manure right now.
Yeah.
He gave maybe the best answer he could in that he said, yes, but he is committed to learning more and he is seeking more learning as well. That Hockey Canada is consulting with experts for additional knowledge, that they're not relying on other people or other information. They're going to experts. And he listed off two or three resources they were working with. She asked Nicholson how the government should govern NSOs so funding isn't supporting sexual assault. Again, if we're paying you money and you're just putting it into a fund to pay out for sexual assault, how do we fix that? Nicholson said that platforms for reporting expenses are vital and that transparency is vital for reporting those expenses. He believes that was in place while he was in charge. Can't speak for it now, but he believed that the transparency was in place while he was in charge.
The issue is that the door was left with the lack of governance, the door was left open for the next guy to come in and let that system be effectively abusive.
Housefather jumped in and wanted to know more about Navigator. Okay, so Liberal wanted to clarify that the board told McLaughlin to hire a navigator and fight back. McLaughlin says the messaging was received poorly by members and partners when they were being defensive, so they changed their strategy. McLaughlin did not say navigator changed the strategy. Hockey Canada changed their strategy. That they were going to go on the offensive.
Yeah.
Housefather was asked about counseling and treatment statement. As we heard in that when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, that the fund basically outlined that fund money was there and the Cromwell found was false. That there was money that they had earmarked for treatment and for counseling if people wanted it, and nobody took advantage of it. So he asked, was that messaging false? Did you write that sort of line basically in there just to cover your own butts? Had Hockey Canada lied to its members? Is basically what a Housefather asked. McLaughlin says it wasn't his area, but he believed that statement to be true and that they were offering those services. So again, he's not involved with finances. He already made that very clear, but he believed that they were actually doing that. Okay, so I get that you're not involved. I get that but you could probably ask a few more questions.
Yeah, that's the thing. At this point, like, you need to come prepared to answer that kind of question. We're like,
again, I'm not faulting McLaughlin for not knowing, but I'm like, just saying
not, it's
that
it's not his area. Right. It's not what he's supposed to be doing. But it's a question that needs to be asked, and I think we need to get that answer from the right people.
And if there's a CFO maybe in the future, we probably will.
Yeah, we should probably.
Lemaire jumps in again from the Bloc Québécois, asks whether funding has been restored from the Government of Canada. Have you had funding restored? McLaughlin says they have been compliant since September 1st with the outlined criteria. Again, didn't give a straight answer on that, but said they've been compliant with what was asked of them. So the OSIC and all that kind of stuff in terms of signing up with that stuff. All of that's been compliant. Julian, again, jumps in after Lemaire, asks why the NDA is necessary regarding the Dan Church firing. If you're going to fire a guy, why did you make him sign an NDA? Nicholson says that there was no set guidelines on NDA usage at the time.
That's a problem.
That is a problem, and he identifies that. He said that Church's situation involved, quote, touchy subjects, unquote.
That's a problem.
Julian clarifies also clarified in the compliance for funding. He wanted to make it clear that there was no government funding going to them. McLaughlin said that no funds have been received, but compliance is important to him, and they are working to make sure that they are compliant still. So again, we didn't get a really good answer on the NDAs, that the Dan Church thing. Again, there was no harassment filed against him in terms of what went on. But basically, the NDA keeps it from getting out as to what went on for the reason he was let go.
This is why proper governance is necessary.
Right.
Because when there's no governance around how an NDA is applied, when an NDA is applied, it can just be, you have just carte blanche to apply an NDA to absolutely anything and everything. And that means no information gets out. There's no transparency. And a guy like Church gets lumped in with a guy like Graham James.
Okay,
and the fact
hold on.
That, like,
so
they both, their NDA signed around things that they had to do with.
So Thomas,
questioning.
So Thomas jumps in and asks what responsibility Nicholson feels he has in the current situation in terms of what's gone on then. So, hey, you've seen what's happened. How
he
do
left
you,
that door open.
Right. How do you feel about that? Nicholson said that the Graham James situation was handled well internally, but not in camera. Nicholson says that he was thorough, but taking no minutes in terms of what went on and how things were discussed was a mistake.
Yes. That's another issue.
Again, this is a guy that's admitting he made a mistake, and I have no problem with him admitting this. He is taking responsibility for what they didn't do. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it's right, but at least we have somebody going, we made a mistake. We screwed up.
You have somebody effectively apologizing.
She asked McLaughlin about the document on the HC website, on the Hockey Canada website, where it says that changes are necessary and blah, 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 blah. Doesn't mention anything about culture.
Yeah.
McLaughlin says he didn't write the document, but that Hockey Canada still has a lot of work to do and he's going to review the document.
Good.
Okay. You know what? Somebody's taking responsibility again. I have no problem with this.
Why, when McLaughlin talks, I actually believe him when he says he's going to do things, when I never believe that for a second with Andrea Skinner?
I will say, and then we're jumping ahead a little bit here, I will say that at the end of the entire committee sitting, every party gets sort of a last sort of 30 seconds to say everybody said this was the most productive meeting. all four parties, Bloc Québécois, NDP, PCs, and Liberals, all four of them said this was the most productive meeting they've had yet.
Yep.
And I'm not denying that. These are good. They're not the best answers, but they're good enough to start somewhere now.
Yeah.
Housefather again gets he got McLaughlin to agree that financials on funds are misleading. That basically that what was written in the financial reports didn't explain everything.
Yeah.
Waugh again asked Nicholson when Hockey Canada should act on rumors, since 2003 and Graham James rumors actually came out to be true. Nicholson says that they need to do their homework quickly and to get the story right before it even gets out to the press, so that they can take care of the problem before it gets to be what it is,
yeah.
Which is a huge scandal now.
Yes.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's a very naive way to look at it, though.
Yes.
Because if they're not being reported, you can't act on them quickly.
Yes.
It's
the proper response in theory.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of work that needs to be done before that to ensure that that is the response that can be had.
Chris Biddle, who was one of the last guys to sort of jump in and make a comment, he's the parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Canadian Heritage, for those asking. I think this question was more of a test than anything, but he asked, what will it take for Hockey Canada to say no to players who have reputations similar to Mitchell Miller?
Interesting.
Does Hockey Canada have the ability to say no to players who legitimately show up on their radar as being a problem? McLaughlin says that all players must respond to allegations and investigations going forward. That's one of the guidelines that he wants to ensure.
Okay, now write that in your governance policies.
That's what he's saying, is that that's what he's going to ensure. He's going to make sure.
Yeah.
Biddle clarifies if a player has a reputation, will he play? Like, if he has any sort of reputation that would be ill-advised? McLaughlin answered with one word, no.
Good. Now, so you take the step forward and add that to your governance. So you can't have an excuse where Don Sweeney can stand there and say, well, you know, we did our research and we thought it was okay. No, have it written down, clear as day, concrete. If this happens, this happens. If somebody does this, this happens.
But I think just acknowledging the question,
yes,
with a no is the first step here.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this has to happen overnight. Again, I know that
exactly.
It won't happen overnight. It will take time to put together documents and go through, you know, the legal teams and all that kind of stuff or whatever. But the fact is that Nicholson and McLaughlin may have given the best interviews.
Yep.
But again, we're talking about a guy who is in charge of strategy, branding, and operations, and a guy who's no longer involved with it. And both of them gave, I wouldn't say clear and concise. There was some rambling that they went on a few times, but they did give answers that the committee can actually build upon now,
yeah,
where they can go and say, all right, we need to follow this line of thinking and get, say, the CFO or get, you know, the auditors.
That's what
the
it
auditors.
All comes back to at this
right.
point, is the auditors and CFO are next on the radar. And it doesn't surprise me. As a person who works in business strategy, it doesn't surprise me that the business strategist will have a line in and say, oh, our governance is really bad, and that's a major problem, and that's a major issue we have to resolve.
Right. And I'm not saying that these guys are giving the answers that they want to hear, but
yeah,
I think it's
they're
more,
giving the right answer.
Right. I think it's more of an honest answer,
exactly,
as opposed to just being what the committee wants to hear.
Having the people with the right knowledge and the right frame of reference in a position where they can actually make a difference.
But, I mean, these are guys that are saying, that wasn't my area of expertise. I was not involved, but this is what I believe.
Yeah.
And that's the important part. Because if you believe that, then you're creating a culture right there.
Yes. And if it's something that you believe, it's something that you're going to follow up on and follow through on.
Right.
If it's a part of the way that you see things and the way you operate.
I will say this right now, and I know Biddle had the question about Mitchell Miller. I was disappointed that nobody hit Bob Nicholson with, why did you sign Jake Virtanen then? Why did you invite him to camp? I was disappointed that nobody said, why did you bring Evander Kane in then? Saying that Evander Kane's separate the player from the off ice stuff.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the same problem with Mitchell. Separate the off ice stuff, and the Boston said, well, he's good for us on the ice, so who cares?
Who cares who he is off the ice?
But again, it matters off the ice.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that nobody went after Bob Miller to ask why the Oilers did that, because Bob Nicholson would have, I don't know if he'd have any input, but certainly would have an opinion on his own team.
Yeah.
But nothing happened there. So either way. But again, very productive. I want to see what the next one's going to look like now, because we got some headway.
My major thing now is we've clearly identified that there are three major issues, really. The fact that the funds were not communicated, that it was not transparent, that people did not know they existed, that transparency did not exist. There was no governance behind. Like, the biggest issue for me coming out of all of this.
But again, I don't know if the existence of the fund is a problem anymore. I think it's the way that it's been described by Hockey Canada.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not that it exists. If you have the ability to make a fund like that to protect uninsured cases so you can have that set aside to help people,
right,
then you should do that. The issue comes from the fact that it was not communicated to parents and players and coaches, that it was basically this
provincial
hidden,
regulators, all that. Yeah.
And the government. And it was hidden. This major pot of money was hidden for very specific reasons, if what we've been told is true. The fact that there was no governance behind it is the second issue, because when there's no governance, there's no rules. That's what it means, is there's no rules about how this money is applied, and that allows it allows someone like Bob Nicholson in the Graham James situation to handle that in the best way possible, the best way he sees fit, and in a way that does protect people and does allow them to stay anonymous or whatever. But it also allows, because the door's wide open, it allows people to abuse that system.
Not minuting any of that stuff. Not explaining why those NDAs are in place.
Exactly.
I agree with you that it's going to open a can of worms I don't know if you can put the lid back on now.
Yes.
I mean, you can. You can write good governance stuff, but you need to stop what's happened. Allow those who want to get out of the NDOs to get out of them.
Yeah. So, like, for the people that are listening, this is like, this should make it very clear that this is not an attack on hockey.
No,
it's not an attack on hockey players. It's not an attack on Canada or Canadian identity. It is looking and saying there were horrible governance practices, and they were used to excuse and aid and abet crime.
You ran your business like a crime family, and now you're getting called for it.
Yeah,
so
that's effectively
called
what
out
it
for
is.
It. Yeah, so.
And
we have
a clear path to make this better.
Right. We'll see what happens in the coming weeks. There's still going to be more meetings. They've already promised that. So we'll see if the committee can come up with something else. But jumping ahead, we got about 17 minutes to go here. 2002 Hockey Hall of Fame inductees were finally added to the hall on Tuesday. Alfredson goes in from Ottawa. Roberto Luongo, Daniel Sedin, Henrik Sedin, Riikka Salonen from Finland, and Herb Carnegie, again, all into the hall, which I think they deserve. I saw some weird stuff online on social media. Some guy from St. Louis, and I won't mention his name because I think he's an idiot, but a very prominent reporter from St. Louis that didn't understand why the Sedins were going in. Dude's never looked outside his window and noticed that there's other countries, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they're only some of the greatest hockey players in Sweden. And the Hockey Hall of Fame is an international hall.
And they have a ridiculous number of club records for Vancouver. They have gold medals to their names.
Individual trophies, accolades. Yeah. I mean, there's a
whole
bunch
of stuff.
Sure,
they didn't win a Stanley Cup, but they have all of these other things.
At 16, they were co-MVPs in terms of being the best hockey players in Sweden. They were voted the best hockey players in Sweden.
And they were so good.
At 16!
They were so good that Brian Burke pulled off
a miraculous
miracle
trade,
to draft them first and second overall.
So anyway, so that got me thinking about next year, because there's three players that are first-time eligible players coming up for next year. Henrik Lundqvist, who I think should be a no-doubter.
No doubter.
He goes in. Corey Crawford, which
I think he could get in like third or fourth time.
You might want to push him aside. Justin Williams, who I don't know. I know why he's in there. I know that his playoff performances were ridiculous, but I don't think he has the career to justify it.
It's not the Hall of really very good. It's the Hall of Fame.
Names that should get serious consideration, in my view, Alexander McGillney should already be in, but he's not.
I don't know why he's not.
I mean, he's the first Russian player to essentially jump in and make a huge impact with this team. I'm not saying that Krutov and Larionov and those guys didn't, but when McGillney defected, that was huge.
It was an international incident.
Right.
If you haven't watched any of the documentaries about his defection, you should know how hard this guy fought to play hockey in North America.
Right.
And what that meant.
Henrik Zetterberg, I think, should be voted. Should be at some. I know that Zetterberg is going to be, because he's not the flashiest, and he's not the doesn't have all
second
the awards
or third
or whatever.
Time around, he'll probably make it in.
Sergey Gonchar, who was overshadowed a lot by Sergey Zubov, and Zubov's already in. Patrick Eliash, who I'm shocked is not in yet.
First, he's one of the greatest Czech hockey players
right.
ever.
I mean, if you're going to go Czech greatest Czech hockey players, you can probably go Jager, Stastny, Eliash, because I don't know if there's anybody else that's better than those two.
But also, you have to think, he's got the Stanley Cup rings, he's got all of the records with the Devils. Like, he was an institution for that team for his entire career. He's one of the few guys that spent his entire career with one team. And
I believe he turned down a trade to the Rangers at one point as well. So,
because he's New Jersey ride or die.
The one guy that I will legitimately go to the grave for in advocating that he should be in the Hall of Fame, though, is Reggie Leach. The fact that Reggie Leach is not in the Hall of Fame yet, the fact that he is, and he's still alive, and he's still kicking, and we need to make this right. Put Reggie Leach in the damn hall already.
The thing is, we talked about this before the show. If you had asked me if Reggie Leach is in the Hall of Fame before this, I would have told you without hesitation, yes. Because he's just the kind of player that you assume is like a McGillney is in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I'll go even as far as saying like an O'Ree, like a Willie O'Ree.
Yeah.
Like, he's an indigenous hockey player who came from nowhere, who turned into one of the greatest goal scorers of his era, won a ton of cups with helping the Broad Street Bullies win their Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
Was an incredible player up and down, and then since then has done all sorts of great stuff in and around hockey, just to make things better for Indigenous hockey players.
From a culture perspective, how is this guy not in? He should be in the Hall of Fame.
The women's spots better be filled from now on, with the two spots that they give women better be filled every bloody year from now on. Because names that are still outstanding, and again, these are ridiculous. Jennifer Botterill hasn't been inducted yet.
Should be in there.
She's one of the most decorated hockey players in the history of the game, and she's not in. Caroline Ouellette, Julie Chu, Florence Schelling, Megan Duggan, the Ranscombe sisters have not been inducted yet. Which,
give them both spots.
Again, give them both in there. Karen Bydeets, I don't know if the Lamoureux are going to qualify if they're eligible yet, but they better go in on first ballot as well. I mean, they changed hockey entirely. I don't know. To me, I look at this and I go, if you're not filling two women's spots every year, you're doing an injustice to the game now.
Yeah.
There are so many good women out there that if you're only going to put one in once every couple of years, you're legitimately not helping the
game.
And
if you don't know, ask.
But that's the thing, is I legitimately don't understand who these guys are on the board that don't on the voting committee who don't understand this. The one builder who I think should go in next year, just based upon his longevity in the game, David Poile, I think, of Nashville should go in.
The only GM in Nashville Predators history.
I mean, he's done so much on the international scene with Hockey USA as well. And I mean, it would be awesome to have David Poile in there with his dad, Bud Poile, as well. Yeah. So don't ever, if you're going to be online and you're going to be on social media and I catch wind of it, don't ever mention Paul Henderson again. Ever. He's already in the Hockey Hall of Fame for the goal. And people have gone, oh, Henderson should be in there. He's a Canadian icon. You know what? He was a Canadian icon for 8 games.
The goal is more famous than he is.
Right. Stop making a case for Henderson, because Henderson's one goal. You can make a case for 3 goals. He had the 3 game winners in that series.
He's not the icon. The moment is the icon.
He doesn't even have 500 career points, let alone 500 career goals. His career is not what it is.
Yeah.
The goal, as you said, Jason, the goal overshadows the actual player.
Yes.
Sorry, that's the way that. That's
and the goal's already in there.
The goal is already part of the 1972 Summit Series extravaganza wing that they have there.
Yeah.
Which means that Paul Henderson's already part of the hall. He's not going to get in as a player, but his moment in time will always be immortalized.
Same reason why the Golden Goal is in the Hall of Fame. The stick, the puck, the gloves, those are all in the Hall of Fame. There's a big display for the Golden
Crosby,
Goal.
Crosby will be in there eventually.
Yes, it's a different argument, but it's a singular moment that is in the Hall of Fame, because the moment is more is the thing that sticks out. It's the iconic piece.
But I'll give you an example then. So Jason Arnott's probably not going to ever get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Jason Arnott had a great career. Jason Arnott played for Team Canada. He was all over the place. Mm-hmm. Jason Arnott did a lot of great things. Jason Arnott's not in the Hall of Fame because he scored one Stanley Cup winning goal.
Yeah.
We need to start really looking. And again, like you said, it's not the Hall of Very Good.
Yeah.
I can't break this down any further. There's got to be standards. I know there are people trying to, you know, quantify some of the stuff that's gone on, but there need to be standards that are hit in order for
so is Alec Martinez going to get in because he scored the Stanley Cup winning goal for the
like people
LA Kings?
People have said, why isn't Pierre Turgeon in? He's got 1300 points in 1300 some odd points in 1200 games. My answer is because Pierre Turgeon didn't do anything.
Yeah, he was a really, really good player. But there's another step beyond that you need to.
He didn't win anything. He didn't go and excel on the international stage. He never was really one of those guys that you turn to as being the leader on his team. You know, whether it's goal leader, assist leader. Yeah, he was a great player. I'm not taking it away from Pierre Turgeon.
And before you say, oh yeah, well, Stanley Cup, whatever. Blah, blah. The Sedin twins, gold medals. Roberto Luongo is not in the Hall of Fame. For his NHL career. He's in there because he won a bunch of gold medals.
But Roberto Luongo, you can make a case for. Only, again, Stanley Cup, nothing. But Luongo was legitimately, he showed up every time internationally. Yeah. Like, you asked him to play and he was there.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I'm not saying that Pierre Turgeon shouldn't be in there at some point. Maybe if you've got a weak set of a weak class 1 year, you can vote a Turgeon in. Yeah. But at this point, there are guys that are international guys, especially the McGillneys, the Zetterbergs, the Eliashes, who should be in ahead of them.
Yep.
I don't understand why people look at it as the NHL Hall of Fame and not the Hockey Hall of Fame, which is what it is. It is not the NHL Hall of Fame. If that's the case, we're pulling Tretiak out. He didn't play in the NHL. So Tretiak shouldn't be in there. Oh, he's one of the greatest goalies. Right. Internationally, he was one of the greatest goalies. That's why he's in there.
Exactly.
So stop making the argument for Henderson and stop. Again, I'm not saying that Turgeon can't get in there, but he's just not at
it's
that level.
It's going to be hard.
Right. So, there are your Hall of Fame rants from me, anyway. I got a couple of things to go through. ECHL, Adirondack released Taylor Joseph. We talked about him a little bit last week, getting signed by Adirondack. And
stupid idea.
He didn't play any minutes. He sat for two games as a backup, and they released him. Kansas City, I found out, released former Mount Royal Cougars goaltender Riley Morris the other day.
Also a bad decision.
He played 31 minutes and 4 seconds as a backup. He went in cold, had 4 goals, including 3 power play goals scored against him in a 7-3 loss against Utah. And then the Mavericks said, well, we're done with you. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah. You had 1 shot, 30 minutes when you were cold, and it was a game that was already over.
Connor Chulk, as we mentioned a couple weeks back, playing with Regina. He's currently on the IR for Trois-Rivières. He's hurt, which sucks because he hasn't played. Utah's Keaton Jameson, former player at University of Manitoba. He has 1 assist in 10 games. Utah's James Shearer used to play for Calgary. He's got 0 points in 3 games, but he's been on the IR for a while now. Allen's Ryan Gagnon, another University of Calgary player, 0 points in 8 games. Idaho's Zane Franklin, who frankly we saw play a lot from Saskatchewan last year, 2 goals, 4 assists in 9 games. Reading's Cameron Nault used to play at the University of Manitoba as well. He's got 0 points in 4 games. I don't know if he's been injured or just been scratched, but he hasn't played a lot. One big note, though, and a guy we're super happy to highlight, former Verdun Oil Capital from the MJHL, Reading's Tyler Kirkup.
Yeah.
Sister Carissa Kirkup, who played here at University of Manitoba.
Bemidji State legend.
Tyler went down to Bemidji State, had a great career there. He's playing in Reading this year. He's got 2 goals and 1 assist in 8 games. He had a goal actually last night as well, so we had to update that quickly. In the SDHL, some more Canada West notes. Regina's JC Magwood having an outstanding season with Moto. 4 goals, 15 assists in 15 games played. She's 9th overall in scoring right now.
Unbelievable.
Having an outstanding year. UBC's Matea Fisher. You might remember her from Norway. She's playing with SDE. She's got 6 goals, 8 assists. She's 18th overall after her 16 games that she's played. So 18th overall in scoring. Alberta's Lindsay Post, who I'm certain everybody remembers because she was just so dominant. She's 6-3 on the season. So you go, it's an all right record. She's got 3 shutouts.
So half her wins are shutouts.
She's got a 222 goals against average, which is 5th best in the league, and a 933 save percentage, which is 2nd best in the league. That's not bad. Not bad at all. That's Lindsay Post-like.
Yep.
Other players that we know, UBC's Kelly Murray has 1 goal, 4 assists, and 12 games for SDE. I'll just say this right now. SDE is basically UBC graduates.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Hannah Clayton Carroll, also playing for SDE. She played for UBC as well. She got 4 goals, 6 assists, 16 games. UBC's Celine Tardif, who's also playing for SDE. She just joined them. 1 goal, 1 assist in 4 games played. Mount Royal's Anna Pershke, 1 goal, 2 assists in 13 games for Lexand. Saskatchewan's Bailey Barassa, 0 goals, 2 assists in 5 games with Moto. She just joined them as well. And Saskatchewan's Daniel Stone, who just came back off injury, 1 goal, 0 assists in 8 games for HV71. For those asking, Moto's in 3rd place right now, SDE in 5th, HV71 in 8th, Lexand 9th. Bottom of the league right now. They're a point behind HV71, though. For those looking, Lexan's playing Djurgården on the 19th, and Moto playing SDE in the All-Canada West matchup.
There you go.
As the province of Saskatchewan is up against the UBC campus. You can check onhockey.tv to see if those games are being aired as well. They've been airing some of them that are free, which is kind of cool, so that'd be nice to see. 5 minutes to go here. Couple quick stories, Jay. Winnipeg Falcons plaque went up this week. Winnipeg Falcons being honored here in Winnipeg for their 1920, winning the first ever gold medal offered in ice skating in the 1920 Antwerp Olympics. You can find that down at the First Lutheran Church on Victor Street. There's a big plaque out there now because all the guys, it's super cool to see. The plaque is written in English, French, and Icelandic because all the guys from the team were Icelandic, but they all lived down in that area. So, yeah. I mean, super cool to see a plaque going up and one of the more famous teams here. Again, if you remember, the World Junior team wore the Falcons jerseys when they played an exhibition game for the World Juniors in 2004 here, I believe. Yeah. And again, the Canadian Olympic team wore the Falcons jerseys for one game when they were playing as well in 2002. So kind of cool to see that. The Team Iceland hockey jerseys actually have a picture of a Falcon and a little maple leaf at the bottom.
Really?
In honor of the guys, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's kind of cool too. Kurt Kielbach will be at McNally Robinson on November 24th. That's next Thursday for a chat and a book signing for his book. So if you want to get down and hear the voice of Jets 1.0, Kurt will be there and doing that. Kiruna, which is a Swedish town, they renamed the street with their rink on it in honor of Börje Salming, who grew up in that town. So nice to see Börje Salming getting a little bit of an honor there. Mm-hmm. And for those that are maybe in charge of rinks somewhere, the Women's World Para Ice Hockey Challenge needs a host city. Hint, hint, wink, wink, Winnipeg.
Wonder.
We'll see if that can get done. I have a problem, and we got about 2.5 minutes to go here. I have a problem with the MTS Iceplex getting a new name because the Scotiabank Hockey for All Center might be one of the worst names in the history of all rinks and arenas.
It's so dumb.
Oh, Scotiabank Hockey for All Center. Everybody's going to still call it the Iceplex, so what's the point of even changing it? But I get the
I still
sentiment.
Call Canada Life Place or Canada Life MTS Center, whatever it is. Call it Center.
So I went out and I asked Jason to rate some names, and we'll go through these. The Chicago White Sox play at their field called Guaranteed Rate Field. Terrible.
Sounds like a double A.
New Orleans Pelicans play at the Smoothie King Center. Good old NBA teams playing the Smoothie King Center. The Louisville Cardinals have their NCAA basketball teams play at the KFC Yum Center.
I was today years old when I found out that Yum was the parent company of KFC.
Right.
I don't know. Why? Just name it the KFC Center.
The Corpus Christi Hooks, which are a double-A baseball team, they play at Whataburger Field.
I like that, though.
You like the Whataburger?
Whataburger Field.
Whataburger Field. The Victoria Royals. I don't have a problem with either of these names. They would have chosen one or the other, but the Victoria Royals and the WHL play at the Save-On Foods Memorial Center.
Hey.
I mean, how many Save-On Foods?
Daryl sacrificed for our country.
I was gonna say, how many foods need to be memorialized? This. That's ridiculous. The Sacramento Kings played in the Sleep Train Arena. The Phoenix Suns played in, I didn't know this, but they played in the Footprint Arena, which was originally called the Talking Stick Resort Arena.
I get you want to buy arena rights, but sometimes your brand name does not fit.
And of course, Crypto.com Arena, in terms of the LA Kings, Lakers, and Clippers, probably won't exist for much longer because
Crypto.com goes the way of FTX, a billion dollars is going to go missing.
Hopefully it doesn't. That's a big thing. Big shout out to the under 18 women's team that's going to be going out to PEI to play in the Canada Games in 2023. A lot of good names on there. A lot of recruits that are going places as well. Ellen Stuner and Grace Glover, both recruited by Alberta, going out there to play. Elizabeth Bird going to Windsor to play next season. Saskatchewan picked up Kaylin Wisner today in terms of her being signed. And St. Mary's out in the East Coast has Charlotte Buffy going out there as part of that team. Lots of great players. Allie Staples will be coming here next week, and I'm trying to read down these names quickly. But all those players are going to be heading out to the East Coast and PEI for that. Jay, we've got to get out of here. We're just about out of time. Anything you want to say before we go?
Have a great weekend, everybody. And put on your winter tires, please.
Please and thank you, yeah. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. We'll stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been the Hockey Show. We always have fun here. Thanks for tuning in this week. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.